Today's gospel is from Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 to 37. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment." But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, "You fool," you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, "You shall not commit adultery." But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go to hell. It was also said, "Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce." But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord." But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. The word of God for the people of God. So the great conversation continues again. Today, Paul gives us the story that we are God's field, God's building. So as I was pondering that, I thought, well, the story is that we are God's field, God's building. So I thought, well, you know, I think I'll consult some really good storytellers and some botanists to get a feel for this, what Paul might have been telling the folks in Corinth, Greece, and might be telling us. So a couple of summers ago, Robin Wall Kimmerer, who is a Native American member of the Potawatomi tribe, she's a poet, she's a botanist, and she's a professor of ecology and forestry at SUNY. And she was giving a talk at a Harvard Divinity School, and through the miracle of internet, I was able to participate in that. She was really awesome. I mean, that is the miracle of internet. How would I ever go to Harvard Divinity School to be able to hear her, you know? So that's really a gift. Anyway, she said that the way she begins her courses in the fall, as students come in, she asks them one question. She asks them, what is the most powerful thing on earth? What is the most powerful energy on earth? And so the students come up with all kinds of things. Remember, this is a class in ecology or forestry or botany. So you come up with things like tornadoes, you know, all kinds of things. So she lets the conversation go, and after everyone has had their own view expressed, then she tells her perspective. And her perspective is that the most powerful energy on earth is the story. The story. Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes is a storyteller, a wonderful storyteller. She's a poet, she's a Jungian psychoanalyst, and a trauma counselor. And she told this wonderful story in one of her talks. And she said, "When we walked to church with my grandmother and were in view of the church, she would often say, 'See that church?' And we would say, 'Yes, we see that church.' Then she would say, 'That's not our church.' 'Yes, it is, Grandma,' we would say. 'That's our church.' 'No, no. Our church is beneath that church. We don't belong to that brick church. We belong to the church underneath that church.'" And Clarissa says that this story, this experience with her grandmother, has stayed with her whole life. And she says, "I think about the church beneath the church and who lives there, that heart of Christ that beats and throbs in the underground, regardless of the mayhem above it. You can hear that heart if you lie on the earth. You can hear it at night in your dreams, in your prayers, in song, in art. It throbs with endless and immaculate love. I can feel it in the church beneath the church, though I often cannot feel it in the church above the ground. The underground church is the place I return to over and over again. Health of the soul, true refuge of the spirit." Some other things that Clarissa says about stories, which really touched me. So I want to share a few of those things that she says about story. "I hope you will go out and let stories, that is life, happen to you, and that you will work with these stories, water them with your blood and tears, your laughter, until they bloom, till you yourself burst into bloom. In this tradition, a story is holy. The story is not told to lift you up or to make you feel better or to entertain you, although those things can be true. The story is meant to take the spirit into a descent to find something that is lost or missing and bring it back to consciousness again. Stories are medicine. I have been taken with stories since I heard my first. They have such power. They do not require that we do, be, or act or anything. We need only listen. Like night dreams, stories often use symbolic language. Therefore, bypassing the ego and persona and traveling straight to the spirit and soul, who listen for the ancient and universal instructions embedded there. Because of this process, stories can teach, correct errors, lighten the heart, provide psychic shelter, assist transformation, and heal wounds. When seeking guidance, don't ever listen to the tiny-hearted. Be kind to them. Heap them with blessing, cajole them, but do not follow their advice. If you have attempted to fit in whatever mold and failed to do so, you are probably lucky. You may be an exile of some sort, but you have sheltered your soul." You are God's field, God's building. The church beneath the church. And when I was reflecting on Clarissa's story with her grandmother when the kids were walking to church, I thought, you know, that's exactly how I felt that morning. I was waiting for Deborah, and I was sitting back there in the dark. I felt the presence of the church beneath the church in this space. The aliveness, the love, the compassion, the caring. J.B. Phillips is a British theologian. He is a New Testament scholar. You might recall that he has, you can find some J.B. Phillips translations of the New Testament. He was also an Anglican minister, and he wrote a book entitled Your God is Too Small. And on page 8, this is a quote from page 8. Many men and women today are living often without any faith in God at all. Not because they are wicked or selfish or godless, but because they have not found with their adult minds a God big enough to fit in with the new science. Now, that sounds like something he could have written last week or this morning or a month ago, right? He wrote that in, ready, 1952. You know, we think we have this problem with empty pews and all this sort of thing now. He wrote this in 1952, and I thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, Einstein came out with his theory of relativity in what, around 1916, somewhere in there, and then quantum physics really started to take hold after that, and I thought, wow, he must have been really ahead of his time in order to have written this in 1952. But I thought, you know, your God is too small, and David White, one of my favorite poets, says, you know, you have to learn that anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. Anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. So back to that was the story research I did on story. And Paul's story for us today is, you are God's field, God's building. And I bet every single one of us has an experience of being in a field. You know, the definition, I looked up the definition, and it was a plot of earth. And I thought, well, I wonder what a person in Corinth, Greece, would have, you know, conjured up when Paul said that to them. So I don't speak any Greek. Unlike Jim, I do not read Greek. But I know how to use Google search. And so I did a search for the Greek word for field, and then what meanings would be associated with that Greek word. And so the Greeks would associate country, countryside, farm, field, of course, is the definition, a piece of land or a tract of land, which is similar to what we probably would. Well, I thought that would be interesting because, you know, in Greece, if you've watched any of those travel shows on PBS, when they show Greece, I mean, those fields are lush. They're growing all sorts of things, wheat, barley, olive trees. So the folks in Corinth would have had a sense of a field. And I thought, well, what does field mean to me? What is my sense of field? So I thought, well, let's see, when have I been in a field? And the first thing that came to my mind was the Logos program. At the end of the year, we would go out to Jack Heyer's field. Remember that? We would go out to Jack Heyer's field, the kids and everybody in church, and we'd have a picnic out there, and the kids would run around, and we'd talk and laugh, and it was just an amazing experience out there in the wide open spaces, the field, the trees, you know, the weeds, all this sort of stuff, fresh air. And I thought, wow, Jim and I would talk about that afterwards, and we both had the sense that that was a Eucharistic experience in the Cathedral of Creation. That was a wonderful field experience. So that was my first field image that came up. Another field image that came up was Marion Lewis Long invited Jim and I out to their farm to pick sweet corn. Well, I had never been in a cornfield, never, ever. I'm driven by, but I'd never been actually in a cornfield. So Jim and I went out with our big old garbage bag, and they said we could take as much sweet corn as we wanted. So we went really into that field, and it was just amazing, just absolutely amazing. Here we were out here with all these corn stalks and this corn and the sun and the fresh air. It was just an amazing experience of just being at one with creation. It was really amazing. And afterwards, I thought to myself, you know, that was such an amazing experience. I forgot to be afraid of spiders and snakes. I'm terrified of spiders and snakes. But I thought to myself, you know, not one time did I say, hey, Jim, there might be spiders or snakes out here. I was so taken up with the corn stalks and the corn and the field and the air and the sunshine and just being a part of that, that, you know, I forgot to be afraid. So that said something about a field. Another experience of a field is just in my own backyard. When I started this five-year sabbatical, one of the things I thought, I'm going to just find out and really be present to this little plot of earth called my backyard. And it's just amazing what's out in a little tiny plot of fenced-in backyard. I have taken photographs, and I've got 10-pound scrapbook albums of just some of the fascinating things that have just appeared in my backyard, growing in my backyard, showing up in my backyard, sometimes invited, sometimes not invited. But that is another experience of a field. Another experience that I had of a field was going over to McKee's for Easter last year. And they have, you know, their yard kind of goes out into that field. And after we ate, we went outside, and the kids were having this raw egg toss thing, you know. And so they'd start close up. They're out here, you know, you can see this whole field. They're out here. And so they toss the egg back and forth, and then they increase their distance. Well, it was just fascinating to be a part of all of that because the kids and the grass and the field and the sunshine and the wind, and we were just like all part of this wonderful dance in creation. And even when you finally got to the point where, you know, one egg toss ended up in a splat, even the splat was kind of, you know, just kind of mysteriously mesmerizing. So that was another experience of field. And I bet if we went around the room, each one of you have your own experiences of being in a field. And so the Spirit can speak to you through your own experiences of being in a field. And John Feehan is an Irish botanist and geologist, and he wrote this wonderful book, The Singing Heart of the World. And in this book, he points out that a single spoon of soil, a single, you know, spoon, about that big, a single spoon of soil from your garden contains 10 trillion, that's T with a trillion, contains 10 trillion bacteria representing as many as 10,000 species. And life would not be possible without them. One spoon of garden soil contains 10 trillion bacteria, representing as many as 10,000 species. And life would not be possible without them. You know, a spoon of garden soil, I mean, it just leaves you in this sense of awe and wonder. Maria Montessori, the, you know, Italian physician that started her own educational process called the Montessori Method, always says, if you're going to go for a walk with a child, let the child take you for a walk. Let the child take you for a walk. You know, in the gospel today, Jesus is dealing with, you know, the Jewish laws. And he's trying to nudge people onto a higher level of consciousness, a more mature level of consciousness about the law. You know, there were 613 Jewish laws. And I keep thinking, how did people ever remember that? I mean, 613 you know, Jewish laws? How did, you know, and they were designed, you know, to show who was in and who was out. And I'm thinking, boy, I'd be out because I couldn't remember those for anything. You know, there was no computer technology. Think about this. There was no Apple iPad. There was no smartphone. There was no Google search engine. So, I mean, try to remember that. 613, I can't remember 613 anything. And so, but they took this very seriously. And so Jesus in that gospel is trying to move them into a higher state of consciousness, a more mature state of consciousness. Rabbi Rami Shapiro wrote a book called Holy Rascals, and he says one way to deal with the literalism and the legalism that can creep into our doctrines and our rules regarding, you know, church law and that sort of thing. Let me read the way he phrases it. He says, he tells us to craft our own letter to God. And he says that what he calls this thou hast mail. He says, it's not about dismissing dogma, doctrine, or belief, but about taking the doctrine, the dogma, and the belief to their absurdist level, their absurdist conclusions. So he took incidents where people actually came and asked him questions about certain things, and he got into his inner child mode, took a big piece of paper and a crayon, and he wrote a letter to God dealing with that particular issue. And these were some of his letters. Dear God, my pastor says you need the blood of Jesus to calm down so you won't get mad and send us to hell. My mom makes me go to my room when I get mad. Maybe you should try that instead. Sammy. Dear God, when people burn in hell, do they swell up and turn black like toasted marshmallows? I need to know for my Sunday school exhibit next week. Tim. Dear God, my big brother says you are like the tooth fairy, so is the money I give at church the same money you leave under my pillow? If so, you are taking a big cut. Hannah. Dear God, my pastor says when your son comes back to earth, he will send my grandma and grandpa to hell because they are Methodists. Please don't let him come back before my birthday because they promised to take me to Disney World. Tony. Dear God, if bad people go to hell and good people go to heaven, where do better people go? Brian. Dear God, thanks for not making me live in Bible times. The people had to eat manna, and my mom never lets me eat stuff I find on the ground. I think I'd starve. Lyle. Dear God, my science teacher says dinosaurs died because a huge meteor hit the earth. Did you mean to do that, or were you aiming at something else? Joel. But anyway, so in a lighthearted way, he takes issues that deal with legalism and literalism, and he approaches it from the heart and the mindset of a child. And I thought that was a rather clever idea. I did sit down, and I wrote my own letter to God. I don't know if we'll have time for that, but I did sit down and write one. And it is a really neat practice. Take a big piece of paper and a crayon and get into your child mode, and it's really amazing what you come up with. John Dominic Crossan was a speaker at the conference at the Center for Action and Contemplation last summer. You know, Linda and Rick went, Pastor Linda and Rick went, and I took it online. I didn't go there, I just took it online. And John Dominic Crossan says, we are not the people of the book. We are the people with the book. But even more importantly, we are the people of the person. You are God's field, God's building, the church beneath the church. When we had the little gospel play up here a few weeks ago, the children were enacting Jesus calling people, making them fishers of people, and the net that he gave them was the net of love. And I thought, that's the church beneath the church. And you know, when these children are acting out these gospel stories, they just sort of bypass all of our rational thinking minds, and it goes right to the heart. The simplest thing, you know, God gave them nets of love. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about all the ways in which we are the church beneath the church. And you know, it's those soup suppers you guys have on Wednesday nights, church beneath the church. It's taking meals to the homebound, church beneath the church. It's children up here with Todd being fascinated by a flashlight and waking us all up to the miracle of light, church beneath the church. It's sending cards to people who are suffering or experiencing some loss. It's smiling at somebody at the post office and just saying hello, church beneath the church. It's making this beautiful music that dances in our souls all week long, church beneath the church. So many ways we are God's field. We are God's building, the church beneath the church. And so I thought, well, how can we carry this over into the week? And one suggestion is just to go out into a field. Find yourself a field and go out into the field and just be there. See what the Spirit makes alive in you. Or take Rabbi Rami's advice and write a letter, you know, from the child within you. Think about what story we live out of. Paul gave us the story that we are God's field, God's building. What story are we living out of? And Dr. Rachel Naomi Raymond says, perhaps the secret of living well is not in having all the answers, but in pursuing unanswerable questions in good company. That's how I feel about this church, the church beneath the church. We accompany each other in pursuing unanswerable questions. You are God's field, God's building, the church beneath the church. And I'd like to close with Fyodor Dostoevsky, I always have trouble pronouncing his last name, Dostoevsky, from the Brothers Karamazov. Love all God's creation, the whole and every grain of sand in it. Love every leaf, every ray of God's light. Love the animals, love the plants, love everything. If you love everything, you will perceive the divine mystery in things. Once you have perceived it, you will begin to comprehend it better every day. And you will come at last to love the whole world with an all-embracing love. Amen.